What are you going to hear on this podcast? Almost exclusively baseball. The Yankees take it to the Twins yet again. The Phillies almost mop, or do they? And an apology to Cubs legend Javier Assad. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that is, quote, open to extension talks with Juan Soto. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And we're open to it. We're interested.
I'm beyond open to it. If I could extend this relationship, which is a podcast that has the privilege to talk about Juan Soto playing baseball a lifetime, I would do that so fast. Now, I know that's going to require us to have a conversation with Scott Boras, which, you know, isn't necessarily going to be the most fun endeavor, but I am definitely open to extending anything involving Juan Soto. That sounds great to me.
Open and interested. We will talk about that on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. We will also talk about the Twins just freaking taking it to the Yankees. Oh, wait, not. Yeah. That is not what happened. It was the other way around.
Someday, maybe, but not today. We are going to talk about, so again, sweeps, mops, semi-mops, migrating mops, all kinds of topics this week. Of course, it's Friday, so we'll have the good, the bad, the ugly. But Jake, before we get to the baseball, I saw Caitlin Clark's home debut last night, and I just want to say, I'm rocking the Caitlin Clark Indiana Fever hoodie jersey, which I had to get, not just because, of course, I want to support, you know, one of the most influential and cool and exciting athletes in America, but also because the jersey hoodie is not an option you see very often at the team shop. So I was excited to see that. But I just want to say that I was very excited to be there, even though the Fever are not very good at basketball collectively right now.
More like the Yellow Fever, I mean, the way that they're sickly. On the court.
The defensive effort was tough to watch, I would say. But you know what? It was really cool just to be somewhere where and to see everyone, just an incredible range of fans of all ages and all genders and all everything, just wearing Caitlin Clark stuff was just the coolest thing ever. I know she scored. I looked this up. She only scored 9 points last night, Jake. She had one single-digit scoring game in her entire college career, just way back in her freshman year. So this is what I'm finding out. Apparently, that professional sports is actually harder than college sports, especially when you were just playing college sports like a month ago. It is absurd that they have like two preseason games and you are just right into it. And I understand it's cool to, you know, carry the momentum from the tournament and everything, but it is an absurd ask for the players entering the league, even as someone as talented as Caitlin Clark.
You know, Jordan, I had a very similar experience. 1 month after I graduated college, I tried to play independent league baseball in California and I got absolutely pumped. I got obliterated. And so as a fellow influential college athlete, a man, can relate to the trials and tribulations of Caitlin Clark. I understand what she's going through. And if I am any roadmap, Jordan, she's screwed. Okay? Because I am now podcasting for a living instead.
Yes. No, I like her chances to make it at the pro ranks a lot more than yours. But anyway, of course, just wanted to shout out that. That was very cool to be in the building for that. Anyway, Jake Mintz, let's talk about baseball. We had an interesting week.
Let me just say, even if my career was derailed by a lack of talent, okay, I still believe that I could throw on the baseball pantaloons and a Yankees jersey and head out to Target Field in Minnesota with 8 strangers and obliterate the Minnesota Twins. Yeah. That is what we have here. The Yankees sweeping the Twins in Minnesota. The New York Yankees, this is from James Smythe on Twitter, in the last 162 games against the Minnesota Twins, which is a season's worth of games, the New York Yankees are 118-44. 118-44. That includes the playoffs, which helps a lot. 118-44. When the Yankees play the Twins, they are the best team of all time. Now, what is lovely about that stat, right, is that both the Yankees and the Twins have gone through cycles. Now, the Yankees are never horrible, but some years they're less good. The Twins have gone up and down. We have new casts of characters every couple of years, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who's wearing the laundry. Okay, the power is in the clothing, and the Twins simply cannot beat the Yankees.
Yeah, and I got to say, you know, I didn't watch these games too closely, but, you know, reviewing the box scores, it was a combination of the Twins' offense from April really showing up in a big way. Remember when they were hitting like 170 through the first 3 weeks? That's basically what happened this week. And the other thing is, I've just been thinking about the Yankees because I just wrote a little bit about Gerrit Cole on Yahoo. You can read today, checking in on 10 of the really famous injured pitchers from the beginning of the season. And Gerrit Cole, who I know, you know, is working his way back, and hopefully we'll see him again at some point. But, you know, the Yankees are going to have an interesting decision to make when he hopefully does come back, because this rotation has been just marvelous. I mean, Carlos Rodon has been spectacular. Clark Schmidt going 8 scoreless. And I know Luis Gil has been one of the best rookie pitchers in baseball. I'm still kind of shocked that he's rookie eligible, considering he debuted in 2021. But I don't know. Again, this is a good problem to have, for sure. But I am really curious to see how they – I don't know if you've heard anything about how they're going to choose to manage the rotation once Cole is hopefully coming back. But
Gil will probably move to the pen.
Okay.
I don't know that for sure, but that feels like the only rational way to handle it.
Yeah.
It's a rookie pitcher and 4 guys who are much more established.
Yeah.
I know Gil's been good. At some point, some other of those arms is going to miss time, and then they'll just stretch him back out.
Right. I'll just say on this, Luis Gil, if that bothers you, there is this man named Javier Assad. At some point, you will get your you will get to prove yourself again as a starting pitcher. We'll get to more of that later. But yeah, it was just outright dominance. Of course, Judge is heating up. We see Volpe is on like a ridiculous hitting streak, I believe. I think, what is it, 12, 13 games now? He's been outstanding. And that's good to see for Volpe, right? He had this incredible start. He kind of regressed a little bit, and now he's heating back up. And that's really exciting to see for him. But lots to choose from in terms of just positive developments for the Yankees.
Yeah. I mean, they allow a leadoff home run to Ryan Jeffers, who rules on Tuesday. And then they go 81 outs without allowing a run.
Yeah, that'll work. Again, this Twins offense, they can sure go to sleep. And the Yankees were happy to tuck them into bed for 3 straight games after Ryan Jeffers went yard. So very impressive showing for the Yankees.
I think we've reached a point now with this rivalry, which is a funny way to say it. How would you say it? Because it's not a rivalry. This matchup, this beatdown, it is a relationship. It's just there's a power imbalance.
Right. I don't even think, you know, the big brother, little brother, like that's understating it to a pretty extreme degree at this point. So I don't know. I think we have to work on our terminology when it's this lopsided.
Right. Like, I think Dodgers-Padres is a rivalry right now because both fan bases really care about beating the other one.
Yes.
I don't think, like, when the Yankees fans see the Twins coming up on the schedule, it's not – there's no sense of worry. There's no sense of tension, right? There's just like, oh, 2 or 3 free wins, you know? And I think that doesn't create a rivalry. I also think Twins fans are like, oh, the Yankees are coming up? Well – I'm not tuning in for that. So I'm not really sure what you would call
it. No, and obviously the fact that they're not in the same division, you know, you're not getting it as often as a Dodgers.
Thank Padres God for Twins fans.
Which is good. I'm sure they're glad. Which is more so, it's like, I think because of that, these series kind of sneak up on you a little bit more because they're definitely not circled, and they're only, you know, twice a year. So It's really something, but I don't know. I think that it's easy to make more out of this and say that this has to do with these two teams matching up. And of course the results this week, I can understand that. But I also just think it was a matter of a Yankee strength and a Twins weakness kind of really combining to create a very ugly result.
In this specific context, yes. And let's just be clear, the Twins players aren't like intimidated by the Yankees and the history.
And it changed, right? There's a bunch of new, what does Carlos Santana, you know, give a crap about this,
right?
Whatever we're calling it.
It's just freaking funny. But that wasn't the biggest Yankees news this week. Hal Steinbrenner, the big boss himself, Mr. Owner Man, went on Yes Network Podcast World, I believe yesterday on Thursday, and was asked about Juan Soto, who's very good.
Oh, Juan Soto, who's going to be that too. Makes sense.
I would also ask him about Juan Soto. Hey, quick question. Brandon Lockridge is hitting pretty well in AAA. No, Juan Soto. We're talking about Juan Soto.
Expanded Lockridge shout out. Wow, I was not ready for that one.
Yeah, I got you, dude.
Sorry, go ahead. That was nice.
I got depth and range. That's good. So Soto's obviously a free agent at the end of the year. Yankees acquire him over the winter for a bunch of prospects. It has gone so well in New York, the type of situation where you just got to do everything you can to keep him in pinstripes for as long as possible. Here's what Hal said. I don't think there's any doubt of that in terms of keeping him forever. His agent, Scott Boris, by the way, he doesn't say Boris, but it's Scott Boris, doesn't tend to normally do deals in the middle of a season. Correct. Neither do I, which is true. Remember Aaron Judge, free agency, blah, blah, blah. I think it can be a distraction, which is also funny because like everything about being on the Yankees is a distraction. The whole thing's a distraction. But as I said in spring training when I met with the media, this is a unique situation and a very unique player. So I wouldn't be shocked if there was a conversation or two had possibly during the course of the season. I think it's worth doing at some point. I would agree. I wanted to give Juan time to really settle in. Good. Very nice. Good job, Hal. You did it. You did it. Empowered Juan Soto to succeed. Have a conversation with him at some point. Make sure that obviously the most important thing is this a place he can see himself for a long time? My end quote. First of all, is this a place Juan Soto can see himself for a long time? Freaking duh, right? Like, I would imagine that that is a big yes. In terms of cultural fit, in terms of how things have gone, this is a no-brainer. I would be shocked and floored if there's any extension done before the end of the year. And that is simply because come winter, Steve Cohen gets to join the fray. The owner of the Mets is just going to drive that price up. Whatever Juan Soto can get now from the Yankees, chances are he can get that and more from the Yankees or the Mets come wintertime. So I would be shocked if this or the Dodgers. However, Soto asked about this after the Yankees beat the Twins for the 85th consecutive time on Thursday. And this is my favorite part. Soto says, quote, "They know the phone number and everything. They know where to call. For me right here, I'm focusing on playing baseball. My thing is try to help the team win." Hell yeah, Juan. Love that. Anytime a player says try to help the team win, I kind of just want to bonk him on the head. Like, freaking duh. Like, that's the point. Whatever. Anyway, they know the phone number and everything is so good.
Well, which begs the question, Jake. Do they actually know the phone number? Yes, obviously he has Scott Boris's contact information, right? But that is a very clear quote. It's 2024. How many phone numbers do you have memorized? I know yours. I think you probably know mine, but maybe not, right? I feel like
absolutely,
I probably,
dude.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It's fine. This isn't me like, oh my God, fake friend. How could you betray me and not know my phone number? But actually saying they know the phone number, like it's possible though. It's possible that Hal Steinbrenner has known Scott Boris long enough that he's, you know, received calls and seen that number pop up on enough phones that didn't have his contact saved where it's like, yeah, no, actually do know the exact digits. Like, does Juan Soto know Scott Boris's exact phone number? Probably not, right?
There's a huge difference between knowing someone's phone number and having someone's phone number, right? And I don't want to nitpick the language here for Soto, who is just like, you know, English is not his first language.
I know.
He is not saying they know it versus they have it. We're being schmucks. However, you raise a great point, and that is people our age don't know a lot of phone numbers by heart. And I would be floored if Steinbrenner had Boris's memorized. I would think that Mike Rizzo, the GM of the Nationals, might have Scott Boris's phone number memorized. How many people on the planet know Scott Boris's phone number by heart is a fun question.
Think about it this way, right? Like, why do you need to know phone numbers now, right? It's for emergencies. You know, it's like if your phone's either out of battery or whatever, and you're stuck in some sort of bad situation and, you know, in rural Europe, and you get to a phone booth, and you dial the extension, and you say, "Oh, who do I need to call? Who's going to be my call?" Scott Boris.
Right? Like, I think I probably know 5 or 6 phone numbers by heart. Yeah. I do know yours. You, okay. you don't, my you fiance, don't, you don't my shit. Parents. Right.
Yeah. I don't even, I'll say this. I know my parents, and I know Bailey's and I know yours. I don't know if I definitely know my siblings, but I guess my brother who's listening to this, maybe he'll be offended. My sister who's definitely not listening to this, she will not care. Now, Jake, the Yankees were not the only team taking care of business this week, winning all their games in certain series. It's the Astros taking it to the A's of Oakland with a full-fledged mop at home, four in a row, all at Minute Maid Park. And if, I mean, you thought the Yankees dominated the Twins, I mean, this was just an absolute clinic of baseball here from the team that we have not seen play this good baseball in much of the season.
You know who doesn't have Scott Morris's phone number? The A's.
hey, they signed Fujinami. I know that didn't go super well, but I remember Scott Boras showing up for the Fujinami presser, and I was like, wow, this looks so weird. Scott Boras with like an A's background and a presser. Anyway, this series, Jake, which was an absolute mop, we'll get to the almost fake controversial mop with the Phillies in a little bit. This series was essentially the Drake Lil Yachty computer meme where the Astros were like, oh, we're the Astros. And the A's were like, oh, we're the A's. Like, this is what was supposed to happen. Is the really good team with all the really good players beats the team that has a lot of players that have barely been in the big leagues. Like, oh, yeah. It took a while to finally get here, but it was nice to see the Astros actually act like themselves for once.
Do you know what Dharma is?
Vaguely, but why don't you just define it for the audience?
Dharma in Buddhism, I believe, is the nature. It's basically the idea. Okay, I'm going to do my best here. This is what I remember from like 10th grade history class. Dharma is basically, yeah. I'm going to mess this up, but
no, it's okay.
I like how I started this. Do you know what this is? I might.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, go ahead.
I know. Very, very Jake Mintz. It is defined as the eternal and inherent nature of reality, the cosmic law underlying behavior and social order. What it is like we all have a role to play in this society, in this life, right? And our destiny is to fulfill our dharma. And the dharma of the Houston Astros in this era of baseball is to whoop the ass of the Oakland A's. And it was very refreshing to see them do that because I am a simple-minded dunce. And I don't want to think too hard. I don't want to have to parse through, oh, the A's are like, hey, they're taking it to the Astros. No.
It's like, no. No, that doesn't make sense.
Doesn't compute in my tiny pea brain.
Yes.
So for the Astros to come out and show some signs of life,
yes,
was very lovely. They are now only 5 games back in the division. They're 5.5 back in the wild card. It's silly to think about the wild card. They're 6 games under 500. I have maintained that I think they're going to be relatively okay. They are a true value 90-88 win team. The question is just, did they dig themselves too big of a hole to dig themselves out of that hole? And it is looking more and more like they are going to be fine. They have won 5 in a row. They are 12-6 since they had the team meeting in Mexico City before they cracked the skulls of the Colorado Rockies twice. They're good. The Astros are good. Alex Bregman has looked better this week.
Yes.
That is encouraging.
Yes.
He's made some adjustments. The pitching still has a lot of question marks.
But it was nice to see. Yeah. It was really nice to see Fromber and Javier both look awesome the last couple of nights. I know Blanco is now suspended, which, again, don't really feel like getting into that again, although that is important because he's been one of their best pitchers. I know he's probably only going to miss one start. Much bigger test coming up this weekend. They got the Brewers coming to town, then the Angels and A's again. So there's going to be room for them to get back into here. But, you know, I tweeted this when I tweeted out the official mop. Like, the fact that the Astros just mopped the A's in May and that put them ahead of the A's in the division for the first time since like the first week of the season is just incredible. I know they still have the same number of wins, but it's coming together. It's coming together. It's coming together.
The A's, we have tiers of teams, right? There is like the bottom, the true poop, the absolute dredges of Major League Baseball. And that is the White Sox, the Angels, the Marlins.
And the Rockies, or so we thought. More on that
later. So we thought. But just quickly, in the A's. The A's are the team that I think can climb up from the muck, that can emerge from the pit just like in that Batman movie, right?
Yeah.
This was not an encouraging week for that.
No, however, no, it wasn't.
They have shown the most. They have shown the most. I believe in them more than all these other teams. Angels, White Sox, Rockies, Marlins. To me, that is the last four in, if that makes sense. So let's talk about the Colorado Rockies just very quickly. They have won seven games consecutively. No, that is not a typo. They swept the Padres this week after sweeping the Rangers over the weekend. They are hashtag hot rocks. They went into San Diego and took all three games. I don't know what to make of this. I'm a simple man, and I don't want to.
Right.
I put teams in places, and I don't want to have to reconsider them.
The Dharma is extremely out of whack as Jake tries to conjure an understanding of these three dominating performances over the Padres in San Diego. And unfortunately, what it really was is like, oh, the Padres, this is just what happens to them, right? When you think they're finding it, they get embarrassed at home. This was like 5-4, 6-3, 8-0. I know that was like a day game, and sometimes you've just kind of given up for that last day game of the series after you've gotten your ass kicked. But Brent Doyle continues to rake. Tovar has really been heating up, which has been nice to see. Jordan Beck, one of their rookies that came up, had like a 1-for-41 stretch or something after his first couple games. He hit his first home run over the last couple days, which was cool to see. He's a fun hitter to watch. And I got to say, I don't really know how they're doing it, but both Cal Quantrill and Austin Gomber have ERAs under 4. And for the Colorado Rockies to have two starting pitchers with ERAs under 4 is, raise the banner is a little dramatic, but they didn't have a single starter with an ERA under 5 last year, right? So yeah. To have two with ERAs under 4. Now, we were optimistic about Quantrill. I think we liked that fit, yeah. That buy low opportunity. But, man, good for Colorado. Good for Colorado.
It's a purple world, baby. We're just living in it. Jacob Stallings is raking. And I think that's an interesting one because it appears that the Rockies have two
good
starting
catchers. Yeah, both former Pirates.
Both former Pirates. And I believe they're both free agents at the end of the season.
Yes. No, I think you're right. I guess they did extend Diaz, but I think you're right. They're both free agents.
And so because of that, a rational, reasonable bad team would trade those guys away for something at the deadline. I think there's no way they trade both of them, but I think the Rockies will, if they are bad, trade one of Jacob Stallings or Elias Diaz. Probably Jacob Stallings just because, he never won the All-Star game.
That's
MVP.
True. That's
there are true. Some teams with some really bad hitting catchers out there who could really use a bat, and I can't believe I'm saying it's Jacob Stallings after I think his OPS was like 400
yeah.
last year.
Yeah.
Amazing
I
stuff.
I wouldn't go that far. It's also hard to trade catchers, so that's another thing to remember.
Yes.
But trade catchers in season, I should say. But listen, the Astros and Rockies are both 5.5 games out of the wild card spot.
Who you got?
Flip that.
Who you got?
Houston here.
Quickly on the Padres. What's that movie quote? I love movies. Just when they think I'm out, they pull me back in. I think that's, the Padres
They're
are
the
opposite.
They are the
Just when they think I'm in. They push me away.
Very, very far away. One more sweep and Momp-related topic before we take a break. Let's talk about the Baltimore Orioles, Jake.
Woo!
Adley Rutschman.
On a heater.
Saving. These are both kind of, sweep mop discourse related. The Orioles and Blue Jays had a series earlier this week where one of the games was rained out and pushed to later this season, which meant that the three-game series became a two-game series. Which meant that the Orioles, going into the ninth inning on Wednesday, were at risk of being quote-unquote swept in two games, which is important because the Orioles have not been swept in any series, or mopped, obviously, in 2 years, 3 years, in the regular season.
In the regular season, I believe it is, I'm trying to see if I can do this, 116 CRI. That is the
it's
number that's in my head.
I'll pull up the official Lang. I mean, Lang's has been all over this. But anyway, so Adley saves
the
their
last
ass,
time,
so we don't have to talk about it. Yeah.
The last time the Orioles were swept was May 13th, 14th, and 15th of 2022 in Detroit, okay, which was a week before Adley Rutschman debuted. So Adley Rutschman has never been swept as a major leaguer, and he ensured that trend continued, cracking a star-scraping, moon-tickling, supersonically high walk-off two-run blast in the bottom of the ninth to give the Orioles a 3-2 win. It was a delightfully bizarre walk-off home run. He hit it so high. So high. I believe it was a 43-degree launch angle. And it allowed him to just kind of watch that thing crest over the wall and right. And the Orioles take that one 3-2, salvaging the two-game series, evening it up. Again, would this have counted as a sweep if they had won the rescheduled game later? That would have, thankfully, we don't have to talk about it. That's very nice. But it is good to see Adley getting hot.
Yeah, Adley's been unbelievable lately. So it's 105 consecutive regular season series without being swept.
Okay.
That ties the 1900s Giants for the third longest of all time. The record is 124 consecutive regular season series. The 1940s Cardinals, the 1900s aughts, whatever, Cubs at 115. So still some work to do for the Orioles to make history, but that was a big deal. We didn't have to debate, oh, is this a sweep? Is it two games a sweep? Now you could also say, who cares? They got swept by the Rangers in the postseason last year in three games. Like, that's a thing that happened.
Correct. There's no,
and that's totally a fair point.
There's no banner. I don't care. There's no banner for this. Dude, the 1943 Cardinals, does that count? I mean, everyone was at war. Like, they just had all the guys with, like, the medical exemptions crushing the baseball. Everyone else was away fighting for the country.
Very, very fair point. But, hey, you play who's on your schedule. You win. Listen, Cardinals took advantage, right? This is going to get into when we talk about Ellie De La Cruz. We talk about Ellie De La Cruz later. Later in the show, it's like, oh, but the rules. It's like, I'm sorry, is anyone else on pace for 100 stolen bases? Anyway, one more topic here. As we mentioned on Wednesday, the Phillies and Mets are played a very strange set of games this week, where they played two games in New York, and then they played two games at Philadelphia. I was very concerned about the Phillies potentially winning all four of these and whether we would call it a mop or not, because these were games played in two separate venues. The reason this is happening is because the Phillies and Mets are playing in London later this summer, and because they're both losing a home game, they decided to essentially combine these two-game sets at home rather than splitting up two three-game series that they normally would have had if they weren't playing in London. Anyway, I was very concerned about this yesterday because I didn't know what we were going to call this if the Phillies won. It looked like the Phillies were going to win, so I put out a Twitter poll, and let me tell you, Jake, there is nothing more validating in this life than having a challenging question that you put to a Twitter poll and have the results be 50-50. And with nearly 4,000 votes asking whether this would be a mop or not, 50.9% of the electorate decided that it would be a mop. 49.1% saying that it would not be. Thankfully, we don't actually have to decide. I will say now here on this podcast, I am leaning towards no, this would not have been a mop. I think that the spirit of this is beating the same team in the same ballpark 4 days in a row. That is what makes this special. And I think that this is two different series. Someone pointed out it's the same umpiring crew, which is a compelling point to say that it was the same, that it was one series. But I do believe that had the Phillies won last night, I would not have put it in the thread because I believe it is just a normal winning streak. So that, I'm declaring that now, but it's not my problem.
I believe that this would have been a mop. I think it feels like the same series as someone who was at half of it. They were treating it like one series. Now, the fact that I was only at half of it is a compelling argument against it being one series. I would say we're never going to really have to deal with this again.
Yeah,
although I guess every year maybe, we might have a London series,
but it won't,
influenced.
It won't always have a situation where they smush these two-game series because of the geographic distance.
Correct. But I think that it is... I think the tiebreaker vote is just Sarah Langs. I think we just asked Langs what she would say, and we let her choose.
Again,
also, we could go to the MLB commissioner's office and ask a very simple question. And I want to know, Jordan, would this question satisfy you? The question would be, is this one series? And if they say yes, it's a mop. If they say no, it's not a mop.
Yeah. For future considerations. Thankfully, Jose Alvarado and his shaky coat control... Thank you. That wild pitch in the 11th. I was just like, oh man, thank you, Jose.
Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Is a four-game victory in the postseason a mop?
No. We've talked about this before. Because again, that's also in two different venues. It's a different thing. It's not, this is a regular season term. I feel very strongly about that. And I think that the same in the one venue thing is really important to it, because like it's that feeling of like in the regular season, like there's so much randomness and just like anybody can win every day. Like for a team to do it in the same place four straight days against one team for any reason, whether the team's really good, really bad, like I just think that that is unique, and that's why we came up with this term. Anyway, enough about these. One final thought before we take a break?
Yeah. To all of our beautiful listeners out there who we appreciate and love dearly, if you bring a mop to the fourth game of a series, similar to how people bring brooms for the third game of a sweep, if you bring a mop and you send us a picture of you bringing a mop to a mopportunity, we will reward you with some sort of prize.
Because here's the thing. Like, that's the whole thing. The reason we started tweeting this was just we were delirious on the road trip and on the bike trip. And I just tweeted this like, oh, it'd be funny if people brought mops. People can bring brooms. So, like, I don't see why a stadium would not let you bring a mop in if they would let you bring a mop in.
So just ask, say you're going to help clean the concourse. Huh? You know? Like, if you send really us a picture of the mop, really clean it, like more than a broom, which is kind of the whole point. All right, let's take a break. And when we get back, we will read a couple emails and apologize for being idiots. And welcome back to Baseball Barbecast. Jake Vince, Jordan Schusterman. Let's get into our bag, our mailbag, that is. And our first email is a long overdue apology. We've gotten a couple of different emails about this particular topic, but there was one we received this week that I thought really hit the nail on the head. And I am going to read it now in its entirety. This is from Hallie Cohen. Good morning, my fellow Yids, which you can say if you know your fellow Yid. Many times you gentlemen have made fun of, or at very least made light of, a quote from Cubs reliever Mark Leiter Jr., in which he posited that Javier Assad is one of the best pitchers in baseball. Correct. Jordan, do you admit to doing this?
That's absolutely. Multiple times have I chuckled at that quote.
Snickered, even.
Yeah.
I'm dropping in to highlight an important and ongoing development, of which I will say, Jordan, we are aware. Javier Assad, if you look at him from a very specific perspective, is indeed the best pitcher in MLB. As of his 6 scoreless innings against the offensively stacked Atlanta racial stereotypes, he has an ERA of 1.49 this season. The time I'm writing this, that makes him the fourth best pitcher in baseball. However, if we stretch that back to June 27th of last year, his ERA of 1.94 is the single best in MLB over that time span. Is ERA the best measure of a pitcher's talent or effectiveness? No. Does making the time frame so specific skew the numbers in a way that is conducive to the conclusion I was hoping for? Yes. Is it also true that the numbers above are incredibly impressive, especially considering he's been able to be effective as both a starter and a long reliever? Yes. Plus, he looks really good out there. He has been such a bright spot of consistency and quality over the last few months, during which the Cubs have dealt with a quantity of injuries that is frankly biblical, and a bullpen that is shaky at best. Bear Cubs and Bleacher Beers, Hallie. Outstanding email. Let's get a couple things straight, okay? Javier Assad is really good, okay? I don't think we were ever denying that he is good. I think we believed in Javier Assad, okay? We were merely snickering at the assertion that he was one of the best pitchers in baseball, to be completely honest.
To be completely honest.
Now, Mark Leiter Jr. said this on August 6th last year, I believe. Okay. Since that date, Javier Assad has the second lowest ERA in all of baseball, behind Tarik Skubal, I believe. But if you take into account that, you know, Mark Leiter Jr. had seen Assad kind of cook for a month before that, dating back to, say, June 27th, it does look like a pretty convincing argument and situation.
And what is important here, and this is mentioned in the email, the reason that Mark Leiter said this originally is because he said it after the game that Javier Assad started for the first time in multiple months. And the premise was Mark Leiter Jr. was like, I know how hard it is to try and be a starter and a reliever, right? Like, he's been bouncing in his career, obviously, at different levels, whatever. He's like, that is why he personally is so impressed at his ability to do that. But now, was like the original sentiment. Whereas now, he's just been a starting pitcher this season. And he's been, you didn't have to know anything about the past. If you just pull up the ERA leaderboard this year through his nine starts, the dude's got an ERA under two. So, I have no way to say whether he was a reliever in the past or not. That is very impressive.
We were rude and dismissive of the truth via Mark Leiter Jr. And for that, I will be eternally sorry when Yom Kippur rolls around. Yes. I will pray for forgiveness and I will atone. I will beat my chest. I have sinned.
I will think of a sweaty Mark Leiter looking into the camera and saying, to be honest, to be completely honest, Mark Leiter Jr.
Correct. I think the ascension of Javier Assad, it's sometimes hard to determine when a pitcher or a player is being like, goes from being fun, cute, good to actually good. Sure. This is something that happened in a similar context with Nestor Cortez.
Definitely.
Where it was like, whoa, this is happening.
Whoa, and then it moves to, like, oh, wait a minute, he's an all-star.
Like the Yankees need him to start game two of a playoff series. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. And Assad has had a similar ascension. And so I think we have officially reached good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What's our next email?
Our next email, Jordan, is from Ian. Ian has just a couple of really nice, straightforward questions, which I very much appreciate. Ian says, some questions for your consideration.
We should clarify, this email was 4 days ago.
4 days ago. We'll answer it today. Who are you feeling better about right now, the Nats or the A's, Jordan?
That's why I mentioned that.
Jordan?
Still the Nats. I would have said the Nats 4 days ago, too.
Me too.
Yeah.
Who are you feeling better about, part two? Ooh, a sequel. Guardians or Brewers?
Brewers, definitely.
Brewers are good, dude.
Yeah, Brewers for a lot of reasons, I think. I think Cleveland's proven a lot too, but Brewers between the two.
Which start is more frustrating, disheartening, Giants or D-backs? I would say that the D-backs are more disheartening and the Giants are more frustrating. Like, because the D-backs could have just rested on the laurels of reaching the World Series and not spent any money over the offseason, but they did, and I want them to be rewarded for that effort. Yes. And so I find it disheartening that they have not had that experience, whereas the Giants, a lot of their lack of success has just been injury related, and I think that is frustrating.
That's true. Yeah, I'm not sure frustrating and disheartening would have them as synonyms here, so I agree with your point there. Giants also tried. They spent a bunch of money, but injuries have mostly derailed them there. So I think I agree with your assessment. Ian's next one. Who are you most optimistic about for the next few years, 2 to 3 years, Tigers, Mets, or Red Sox? I think, you feel like you have a pretty strong answer.
I do, but I want to see what yours is first so that you don't copy me.
Interesting. I am going to say the Red Sox slightly over the Mets. Slightly over the Mets.
Okay.
But I'm between those two over the Tigers. Pretty comfortable.
Yeah. Mets for me. I think their new president of baseball operations, David Stearns, knows what he's doing. I think they have an unlimited pool of money to work with. I think they have a pretty solid farm system. I'm worried about their pitching, but I think they can just go buy that if they need to. Their money is going to come off the books, and even if they let Pete go, I don't think that's the end of the world. I would say the Mets. The Tigers just don't have a monster. And no. I think the Red Sox haven't changed enough and are still focused too much on the long term. their ability to just conjure pitching out of nothing is really amazing and will help them moving forward. But
yes,
I would say it's Mets, Red Sox, Tigers in that order.
That's fair. I'm leaning Boston because while they also have a million injuries, I still like their offensive core and what they have coming combined with the fact that they clearly have improved drastically in their pitching development, acquisition, and all that stuff. So, but, and in theory, they'll spend money again at some point, but maybe not. So that's close for me. That's why obviously Mets, I'm just concerned about how the Mets are going to get outs. And I also am concerned that they are wasting the primes of their best players right now.
Yeah. Who are you most optimistic about for the next few years? Part two is the last one. Cardinals, Astros, or Blue Jays? This is a phenomenal one. And I think we should just crumble up the Blue Jays and toss them to the side because I feel the most pessimistic about them.
I think I agree. Yeah, I think I do too. I think they, well, okay, so Toronto and Houston have the weakest farm systems between, you know, St. Louis still has a pretty strong farm, I would say. But again, the infrastructure is in doubt in all three of these places. Now, again, 2 to 3 years is an interesting time frame, right? I think this is an even interesting question for the rest of this season, you know, let alone 3 years from now.
I am going to continue to be optimistic about the Houston Astros burn me. I understand that Jeff Bagwell, who has no experience in baseball executive, whatever, is essentially running the team. I get that.
Right.
However, I understand the farm system is kind of poop. I get that. I understand that Yordan and Kyle Tucker will be a free agent after next year. I get that. Still, I will pick the Astros until they burn me.
Okay, so, and that's the long term too, not this year. You're saying like 2026. Okay, sure. I think I agree with you. I think that their talent that they are still projected to have on the roster in 2 years is still more encouraging than the other two teams. Yeah. So I think it's that simple. But that's a great question, so thank you to Ian.
One more. This is from Austin, Jake, and Jordan. Let's start with the subject line. I went to 15 Nats games and they went 0-15. This is unbelievable. Yes, you read this correctly. Between 2022 and 2024, there was a stretch where the Nats lost 15 straight games I went to. Last year, I even went to an A's Nats game and they still lost. What a freaking burn. However, on May 7th of this year, I got to watch them win a game in a 3-0 victory over the Orioles. That was a great game, actually. I didn't go to any games in 2021, so this was the first time I had seen the Nationals win since 2019. Do you think this was some kind of record? I wish I had a list of every game I went to during that stretch, but MLB Ballpark app does not give you the history of games you went to. Would love to hear your thoughts on this. Sorry, I got sidetracked. I did skip a paragraph. Love the podcast. Okay, so we had a bit once upon a time, Jordan, called Statistus. And Statistus is the Greek god of irrelevant stats. And you could holler out to Statistus and say, Statistus, how many games have I seen in which Wilson Bedemit got a hit? And Statistus would holler back this irrelevant stat to me. Okay?
Yes. Yes. But Statistus also has the answer to Austin's question, which is, what is the record for most games attended by a fan in which the home team lost? And I would say that it's probably not 15 because, I mean, it's not that complicated. Like, you were just going to games of a bad team over a three-year stretch. Like, there are a lot of bad teams that have been really bad over three-year stretches that people have probably, it depends how many games you're going to. Now, this is clearly very unlucky, right? It's still baseball. And in theory,
any given Sunday.
Yeah, you know. Right. So with that in mind, but like, I still, that's why I do think that like, it's not that. It would be much more, honestly, if it was 15 games over more years, I would actually be more impressed or kind of shocked by it. But if you compress them into years when the Nats were terrible, like, yeah, it's not that shocking. However, I am curious what the record is.
We need fan stat head.
Right. I agree. Again, that's what we're looking up to the sky above, asking these very pointless questions. But it's also related to the paragraph we skipped, which is Austin being concerned about the direction of the Nationals. Again, related, right? Like, yeah, they're bad. So now, that's and not as bad as they were the last few years, but they're still bad.
Now, this is why I score every game I go to, so I can flip back through it and know which games I was at. Let us move to the good, the bad, and the ugly. I will begin the proceedings today, if you don't mind. And my good is very simple. My good is that the bad teams have been good. The bad teams have been good, or at very least, they have been better. They have shown some signs of life. The Marlins are 4-6 in their last 10. Hurrah, hurrah, huzzah.
White Sox are 6-4. White Sox are 6-4 in their last 10.
6-4 for the White Sox. Rockies have won 7 in a row. And it's just a reminder that everyone deserves a snippet of joy. That even if your team sucks, there are things to care about and relish. And yes, you should go to the, you know, the front office and say, you are frauds, ownership, you are cheap. However, the players on the team are generally doing their best. And when good things happen, they deserve to be celebrated. So that is good. The bad is good.
Yes. Be happy for the players who, of course, trying their best to win Major League Baseball games, which is really hard. And then the concept of spoiler, right? We think about it in the standings later in the season. Oh, this team's trying to get in. But even now, I do think that, like, Rockies fans, you know, reveling in Padres panic because of this series, I think it's hilarious. Like, you got to enjoy that. I think that's great.
It reminds me of the end of 8 Mile. A lot of references today. The end of 8 Mile, where Eminem's like, all these things about me that suck, I know them. I am horrible. And you are also bad, and here you are with me. This is Rockies fans saying to the Padres fans, you lost to us? We're bums. Our team stinks.
Yes, yes.
And I love that. Like a pig in poop just and rolling around in it.
White Sox fans, this weekend, what an opportunity as the White Sox arrive in the Bronx, right?
Oh,
I have that. Just take one. Just squeak out one. Let's nail down a victory and send these pompous Yankees fans into a state of disarray. I need it.
I hate myself. I stink. I know this. You're not there yet. You will be. That is such a sharp and cutting way to disassemble someone's sense of self. Mm. I love it. What's your good?
My good is Ellie De La Cruz. Ever heard of him? Sam Miller wrote about this in his fantastic Substack, Pebble Hunting, which I encourage everyone to subscribe to. But this is something that I've mentioned, and I mentioned earlier this week. I really don't think people are quite understanding how often Ellie is running. We are really at little league levels of, oh, well, there he goes, right? You talked about this comparing it to your kids earlier this week, but that's what's happening. And Ellie De La Cruz is at 30 steals, Jake. We talk about the Phillies being the first to 30 wins. Ellie De La Cruz is at 30 steals. He talked before the season about how his goal was 80. That ain't going to be a problem if this man stays healthy, as he is 13 ahead of second place Jose Caballero. This is a good tweet from Bryce Spalding, who is a Reds fan, who I enjoy his content. He said, last year, Ronald Acuna led baseball last year with 73 steals. He did not reach 30 until June 16th in the 70th game of the season. Ellie has 30 on May 16th in game 45. That is just ridiculous. And I am so impressed. And I just cannot believe that
don't compare him to Ricky. Ricky wasn't able to steal every time because the pitchers can only throw over so often and the bases are pizza boxes. And like, yeah, that's all true.
But Ellie is in a class of his own, and I'm glad he's like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm the fastest player in the league, and you're going to let me run like this. It is so, so, so great. And the other reason is that it makes him getting caught. This is something that, like, we really have not had. I guess sort of a Trey Turner a little bit, but, like, Ronald gets caught all the time. He's getting picked off, whatever. Like, there are fast players that get picked off all the time. But, like, Ellie getting caught now is such an exciting event, you know, like, for the other team in a way. You know, Austin Barnes throwing out last night. So I just love everything about this. There's another Ellie thing that I'm going to save for my ugly. So anyway, but that's Ellie. He's amazing. I love him so much.
I am going to talk about, for my bad, K-Bear Ruiz.
Oh gosh. He was on my shortlist for bad this week.
So let's just give a little context. K-Bear Ruiz came to the Washington Nationals in the Max Scherzer, Trey Turner deal alongside Jojo Gray. And the idea behind K-Bear Ruiz at the time was that he was a solid to below average defensive catcher with elite special bat to ball ability, right? He made a ton of contact. The power wasn't quite there yet, but he was able to do two things that very few people can do. That is put on catcher's gear and make a lot of contact, right? And as a result, the Washington Nationals gave K-Bear an extension, which at the time looked like something of a steal for the Nationals, okay? 8 years, $50 million total, right? You're like, wow, franchise catcher, 8 years, $50 million, that looks great. However, such is the problem with extending anybody, let alone a catcher in their early 20s, is there is always a cliff that can be driven off of before a player establishes themselves. And this year, K-Bear missed some time with injury. I know he was out. I believe he was just very sick for a bit. And he has come back and has hit completely horribly, just beyond awful. He is currently slashing 141, 186, 207. That is a WRC plus of 12. The league average is 100. He has been one of the worst catchers in baseball, if not the worst catcher. His defensive abilities have also backed up to the point where his framing, I believe, is like ninth percentile. He is a bad defender. And by all accounts, K-Bear is a very nice guy. People really like him. He's a hard worker. He's done and said all of the right things so far, which in some ways makes it even harder to handle as a fan because you are watching a likable player go out there every day and stink while there is a capable backup, Riley Adams, who could totally be a second division starter and no one would blink an eye. But because Ruiz has been extended, the Nationals are incentivized to give him every last opportunity to fail. And if he turns it around one day, maybe we'll look back like we did with the White Sox and Lucas Giolito that year, where it was like, why not give the guy a chance? You've invested. But it is just a tough scene right now. And I would imagine that it is not a fun time to be like Riley Adams, where you're like, I am playing better than this guy and I'm being punished because he got all this money, you know? Sure. And so I think it's just altogether an unfortunate situation behind the dish at Nationals Park.
Yeah. I'll just say I've talked a lot about on the show about how important it is to know who your catcher is and going to be. And for the Nationals to think they had that answer and for that answer to so far be a very wrong answer is very troubling, because that's just a huge commitment. Just so much flows through your catcher and trying to solve that. There's so many organizations that are desperately looking for that and they thought they had it. And I don't want to totally doom him because of the injuries that he's dealt with and just kind of the fluke, you know, sickness stuff. You know, he's lost a lot of weight, but he has a lot of work to do. My bad this week, Jake, is the best baseball player in the world in April has been one of the worst in May. Tyler O'Neill in May is hitting 152 with a 47% strikeout rate, which is very high. This is an all-time case of regression. But I'm not here to just crap on Tyler O'Neill's epic regression, because I have a feeling that this weekend he might start to turn it back around, because where are the Red Sox but St. Louis? And Tyler O'Neill will return to Busch Stadium. If he's going to start turning it on again and start launching balls out of the yard with regularity, wouldn't be surprised if it comes against the Cardinals. But 47% strikeout rate over any amount of time is very bad. So that is why he's in my bed. What is your ugly this week, Jake?
Tristan Casas. Mm-hmm. You see this?
Yes.
So Tristan Casas is hurt right now. First baseman for the Boston Red Sox, who was outstanding second half of last year and then looked really good to start this season. He is on the IL for, I think, about 2 months. And Tristan Casas made some waves this week because he seems to be going a little crazy without being able to play baseball, which is totally understandable. That's why I went off the rails, because I can't play baseball anymore. But Tristan Casas, there was a video of him in the dugout kind of like on the top step, tracking every pitch that comes in to try and get his timing going. And there were some bad takes, some good takes flying around, some bad takes. Some people were like, oh man, Tristan Casas, like, he must rub his teammates the wrong way if you do this every at bat. I don't think that's true. I think Tristan Casas is an odd duck in an endearing way. And I think that the teammates of his on the Red Sox, I don't think that him timing up hitters from the top step is like what's going to push you over the edge on Tristan Casas. If you don't like Tristan Casas for whatever reason, because you think he's kind of weird, I like him. I know a lot of players do, and I like him too. But if you don't like him, I think that is already kind of set. I don't think this is the tipping point for you. And then there's also a video of him in the bullpen, just like staring out aimlessly a Red Sox bullpen coach just kind of shoots machine baseballs in his general direction. I just sent it to you, Jordan, on Slack. It's very goofy. Tristan Casas has a horrible demeanor.
Oh, I see.
For like a hurt guy. Like, he is so much, you know, like, I can imagine him just like, I want to play. But I guess I'm just saying this because I think Tristan Casas is different. I just think he's a different cat. Yeah. And I think that's a good thing.
This bullpen video is amazing. I will say the one take I haven't seen yet is that my problem, if I was his teammate, him doing this in the Red Sox dugout, is that the Red Sox dugout is tiny. And if you're taking up too much space in that dugout, I could imagine that bothering me. Just saying. Tristan Casas is a big guy. Like, dude, take a seat. Take it easy. You're not coming back anytime soon. Like, it's fine. But I agree with your general point about him.
Tiny dugout. It's also a very tiny dugout over there in Fenway, you know?
That's what I just said. That's exactly
what I was listening to you. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. That is exactly the point. But thank you for reemphasizing and saying, I'm going to say it again.
Yeah, I like that.
My ugly this week is Ellie De La Cruz. What did Ellie De La Cruz say after the game yesterday? Last year, after Ellie De La Cruz played at Dodger Stadium for the first time, he did his interview, his post-game interview with Jim Day. And Jim Day, legend, love Jim. I've been very lucky to get to know Jim since I've been going to Cincinnati all the time. He asked him, he's like, oh, you know, a lot of players get this question. Oh, it's LA, you know, you're showing out, whatever. And last year, when Ellie was still doing his interviews in Spanish for the most part, he said something in English that caught people's attention. He said, this is my city. Ellie said, this is my city last year about LA. And people were like, what are you talking about? There was this all confusion. Like, why did he say
this? Future Dodger.
What is going on? Right. Okay. So obviously you get those takes, whatever. This year, last night, he steals four bases. Post-game interview with Jim Day. Now Ellie's doing his interviews mostly in English. Incredible. And he brings up to Jim Day, brings up, because last year said, this is your city. And now we get a more of an explanation. And this explanation is twofold, okay? And the reason why it is ugly will be very apparent. The first part that Ellie says is that LA was the first place he went to in America when he was younger. So that was like the first city that he saw in the US, and he loved it, whatever. To the point when he was younger, he would apparently tell people he was from LA. Like, he's like, this is my city. But then he says that the reason he really loves this is because he used to play a lot of GTA. Which is, it was unclear if he was saying he played it a lot as a kid or he still plays it now. Either way, that fictional LA, aka Los Santos, is the reason that Ellie De La Cruz is like extra bawling out when he goes to Dodger Stadium is as ugly as it gets. And warms my gamer soul.
As long as Ellie doesn't try and steal a fighter jet. Okay.
Yeah, let's keep those, you know, when we're talking about five stars, we're talking about StatCast catches, not the FBI helicopters coming after you.
When we're talking about heat, we're talking about exit velocity. Ellie seems like a pretty chill guy.
We're throwing it across the diamond.
I'm not worried about him. But just remember, you know, video games, they're not real. Where's GTA 6 going to be? The new one is going to be in Miami, right?
I think, yeah.
It's like, yeah.
That'll be his city.
That'll be a city. Yes. Oh, that's so good, dude.
Oh my gosh. All right. Anyway, so I'm just going to be making that now. Pressure's on Red Social to start coming up with some cheeky GTA references. I know some of the people that run at Reds. They're good folks. I'm gonna be at the ballpark. They're gonna be playing the Dodgers actually next week.
Here's an easy one. Yeah. Here's an easy one. Another rock star game for Ellie De La Cruz. There you go. Easy.
That's good. That's good. All right. That's my ugly. That's our good, bad, and ugly, Jake. We've already gone a little long on this episode, so let's keep the weekend preview tight. It's the BBQ Bowl. It's happening, Jake. The Orioles and the Mariners, our two favorite teams, will face off this week. The last time they played each other was my wedding weekend when the Orioles were in Seattle. A couple incredible games, I believe, two extra innings games last time. I was not paying attention because I was getting married and you were there too. We did watch the Friday game, which was like the Mariners absolutely dominated the Friday game and then lost two heartbreakers on Saturday and Sunday. All I'll say is I continue to marvel at just where we are at with our two teams. The fact that they both went through extremely different rebuilds. One very intentional, let's lose as much as possible. One with the Mariners, let's completely trade away the entire roster and just reimagine it in Jerry DePoto's image and change everything about the player development. And here we are in 2024, the Orioles, the pinnacle of hitting development, and the Mariners, the pinnacle of pitching development. And they have both just produced hitters and pitchers at rates that other teams are so envious of and sometimes leave us frustrated as fans because of the shortcomings in the other parts of the roster. Obviously, the Orioles are in much healthier shape overall, certainly due to ownership and just due to the overall strength of the system. But hey, Mariners are in first place, and this will be a really fun series this weekend with Seattle visiting Baltimore.
I can't wait. I'm going to watch a good amount of this, unlike last time when I didn't because my jerkhead friend just had to get married.
Jordan, go ahead.
I believed, let's see who the Mariners are playing on my wedding day. So that
I was going to check that, right, because they play. Okay, so this is interesting. The next Orioles series is July 4th week, I guess July 2nd to 4th, but the Mariners it's really about who the Orioles are playing, right? I guess it was both last time. So
Orioles are playing the Rays on the day of my wedding, okay. And the Mariners will be in St. Louis. So St. Louis. There you
okay,
go.
Interesting. All right, that's fine. Any other series you're looking forward to watching this weekend? Pirates took the first game of the opportunity against the Cubs. Skeens versus Hendricks this afternoon. By the time you're listening to this, hopefully you are watching all of Paul Skeens' splitters be 10 miles an hour harder than Kyle Hendricks' fastballs. What are the other series you are looking forward to this weekend?
Padres Braves tickles my fancy. And then Brewers Astros is a great prove it series. Brewers, I love a series because, again, I'm an idiot. I love a series where no matter the result, you can derive a conclusion for it, even though that's just not how regular season baseball works. Mm-hmm. Brewers take all three. They're a real juggernaut. Houston's in really big trouble. Houston takes all three or they win the series. You know, it's like, oh, they're back. Are the Brewers paper tiger? Like, you know, I love that. Mm. It's great.
Twins Guardians at the top of the AL Central is very interesting. And then Tigers D-backs. Tigers 21-22. D-backs 21-23. Both of them kind of stuck in the mud. I think we got Scooble going tonight. He's been fantastic. So I think that's also one where both of those teams need to find some sort of momentum, and that could be an interesting opportunity for both of them. All right, that's it. We're done. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Everyone have a wonderful weekend. We will talk to you again on Monday. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. And everyone have a wonderful weekend. Thank you so